Welcome to this week's episode of Time Added On. Forest lose 1-0 under the lights at the City Ground on Saturday to make it back-to-back home defeats. A lacklustre performance all around made for an extremely disappointing weekend. But we're going to try and bring a little bit of festive joy to proceedings, try and put a little bit of humour into it. And we're going to break down what went off on Saturday and look forward to, well, hopefully look forward to what is going to be a busy week from a Forest point of view. Two away games back to back, away to Fulham and Wolves this week in what could be a huge and pivotal week. Although I feel like we're saying that every week on the pod. There's so much to say about not a lot, I think, is probably the way I would sum up the game on Saturday, because it was a bit of a nothing game. What are your thoughts before we get into some of the points I've jotted down here? What are your overall thoughts on Saturday evening and obviously the 1-0 defeat to Everton?
Well, it was a rubbish game, really, weren't it? I just feel like you know, it wasn't the greatest game to probably be live on Sky Sports. I don't think it was one that was pretty on the eye
not
for anyone.
Not one purist, was it? No.
No, look, I think I know when, you know, when Everton are playing away from home, that they're probably not going to be the most exciting team to watch. But, you know, they
were a damn sight more excited than we were on Saturday. Let's get that out there.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, well... But, you know, it wasn't the greatest game of football all around. I go back to if they had a better striker up front and Calvert-Lewin was playing, I think they score more than one goal. I know the response to that will be, well, if we had a 1-year, but at the end of the day, you've got to create chances. And I think they created some for Beto that he didn't take, or at least got him into some good positions and that he didn't deal with very well. And whereas I think we really struggled in that area of the pitch. I think in the games so far this season, you know, I've been saying for a long time, I don't think we've got as many points as we should have by this point. But, you know, people are quite happy to just, you know, see what they've seen on the pitch and the signs of progression in the playing style and things like that. But I think, you know, Saturday was the first proper sign. You could probably see some rumblings in a couple of games before as well, but probably the first proper sign where actually there wasn't any of the progression that we've seen, even in terms of performance, never mind the result so far this season. So in that respect, it all round just did not go to plan at all for Forest. I know, easy to say because the result didn't go well, but also just in terms of everything they've worked on so far this season, none of that was visible, I don't think, on Saturday.
No, there's quite a bit to unpack there in what you said there in a short kind of minute, 2 minutes. But I definitely think that is the case. I definitely think it was the first game we were saying in the car on the way home. It was the first time I've walked away from the ground or you know, thought about it in the moments after a game where even when Forest have lost in recent weeks, there's been plenty of positives to take from it. You know, even the West Ham game, even Brighton, we were saying on Saturday, weren't they? In some respects, there were positives in that game. The Forest have just been they've been shooting themselves in the foot and they've been making sloppy mistakes. Saturday was the first time where I've walked away from it and gone, there's not a single positive I can take from that. Maybe other than Murillo's performance, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, in terms of a team performance, it was poor. And there were some really worrying signs there, I think, for the first time this season, about where this team is heading. And I think that was one of the things that really concerns me. Now, you might look at it and Forest might pull out a couple of results here. I don't want to go too overboard because I've been very much saying on this pod that you can't get too high when you win, you can't get too negative when you lose and stuff. But I just think that performance there's some worrying signs there. Forest might completely blow that away this week and just put that down as a bad night at the office, and they might go and get a couple of really strong results away at Fulham and Wolves. But in isolation in that 90 minutes, there were some worrying things and some worrying signs, because Forest really offered nothing, and it was more the style of play, which we'll come on to talk about in a minute, that was more concerning. I think in terms of the way the match went, I think it went pretty much as we would have expected in terms of it went to tie. We talked before Brighton and Everton that we thought this one was going to be the toughest game out of the two. I'm not sure it was in terms of the quality of the opposition, but what Everton did do well is that they stifled Forest. Everton, there's nothing special about Everton, but their away performance and the way they go about things just stifles the opposition. And I think whenever Forest had the ball in a dangerous position when they did manage to get it into dangerous positions. They were being swamped by Everton, though. There was three players around Alanga at times, around Gibbs-White at times. And then they got the ball forward quickly. And Beto was rubbish. I think he was rubbish on Saturday night. And I agree, if they had Calvert-Lewin, that we probably would have conceded another one or two. But they got the ball up to him quickly and they played off him. And they are nothing but effective, Everton. And you can see what Sean Dyche has done in his short spell at his short time at Everton. And I mean, they'll be all right, OK? Well, I think we said that before. The points deduction, they are going to be OK. Everton have got enough about them to get themselves out of trouble, I think, this season, even with the 10 points deducted, which is, you know, an indictment of where we are in the Premier League this year. But I think it went to type, and Forest fell into the trap far too quickly, and they couldn't move the ball quick enough, and they weren't good enough to get round Everton's style of play. And I think that's the most disappointing thing about it. But in terms of the way the game went, it went exactly to type. I mean, the whole evening was lacklustre. I mean, we've got to touch on the first thing. Obviously, a lot of time and effort goes into those Forza Garibaldi displays, and I actually quite liked it. I've been seeing the picture back now, quite like the one from Saturday, but it wasn't helped by the fact that the sound system wasn't on the same wavelength, and Mullican Tyre wasn't played, and it just, from that moment onwards, it just had a bit of a lacklustre feel. The atmosphere didn't therefore get to what it normally is. We tried in the Trenton, didn't we, to get it going, but it all just felt a bit comical in reality, and I think that probably set the tempo for the whole night.
Yeah, I did. It's weird, isn't it, when these things happen, that you immediately just go, We've really set the...
And then they swapped in, so I was really pissed off with that. Yeah. I hate it when teams do that. That's why they do it.
But... I mean, I was nudging you, weren't I? I was like, when are they going to stop playing Darude Sandstorm? Like, I've had enough.
I mean, it's a good tune.
They weren't even playing that well half the time. That was going in and out. I was a bit like, what's occurring here? And I wondered whether there was going to be I don't know, whether we were having a minute silence for something, or like a stoppage before the match. And then it just never happened, and it really summed up the tone for the rest of the day. It's like I said before, it's funny how the little things that really shouldn't matter, because at the end of the day, regardless of Mullican Tyre being played or not, those 11 players on the pitch ultimately decide the fate on whether Forest get 3 points or not. But you do, you know, it's amazing how those little things can have a bit of a domino effect. I'm not saying it did for the players, but, you know, in your head, that's the way that you're thinking. But yeah, it just didn't set the tone at all. And obviously, you know, the atmosphere struggled to really get going. It was a really good display from Forza Garibaldi. But a shame that it ultimately got ruined you know, the display still got set out and we still got to see it, and it was a brilliant display and the players would have seen it, which would have helped. But, you know, ultimately having Mullican Tyre going alongside it obviously amplifies it to the next level and the next degree. And apparently it gets, you know, controlled from the northeast, which, you know, is a recipe for disaster. Anyway, I know things like adverts and the TV screens get controlled externally as well, which I get that part, but the music in the stadium, I thought maybe
I'll do it from Spotify.
Timing's pretty key for that, you know.
It helps if you're in the stadium.
Even if you have a minute, if you're a minute behind the stream in the northeast, like you're playing Mullican Tyre all over the show.
Well, let's move on from this bit. But the whole thing was comical in a way. But yeah, it was a real disappointment. But let's talk about the team sheet and the team news. Obviously, when it came out, surprises for this one. We were talking on the way up, weren't we? That, you know, we talked last week about, does Bolly come in for Nyakate? We were all laughing about the Sangare thing because we all knew as soon as Cooper said he'd been struggling and not trained all week, we knew that meant he was playing. Yates then coming in for Dominguez, which I think we thought was a bit of a surprise, albeit Dominguez has not had a brilliant couple of games. But the form he showed before that showed that, you know, you've got to back players perhaps when they're having those blips. And I suppose Serge Aurier coming in was the big one. Some suggestion that Aina actually had a knock. We thought he might come in, but maybe with Aina therefore switching over to left back and Toffolo dropping out, which would have been really harsh on him given his recent performances. But I suppose what I'm trying to say, there's a few eyebrows in the team selection for this one. What were your thoughts when you saw the team?
The central midfield surprised me a little bit because I did think Sangare was ill, and I still think he was ill. Because I think, albeit I'm definitely nowhere near as critical as anyone. I actually thought in large parts of that first half anyway that he'd had a good game. But if you've been ill for the week before, you know, these people aren't superheroes. And if I'm ill, I definitely don't want to go out on a absolutely freezing night on the football pitch. And probably I wouldn't put in my best performance for the full 90. And my best performance is a very low bar. So for someone like Sangare, that he's never getting up to his level. You know, I thought he struggled in parts as well. And I wonder whether that was to do with illness in the week before, and whether he was shaking off just a little bit of that. And Yates, I mean, we spoke about Yates being a possibility coming in because of, I suppose, if you were going to play Yates, this would be the kind of game that he would be perfect for in some respects. I think in changing, I think Forest set up to try and match, if you like, or counter Everton, depends which way you look at it. I think they try to become a little bit more physical, and I think putting in Yates kind of aligned with that thinking. But what you lose with that is probably a little bit of quality on the ball, which is what Forest have been trying to do for the rest of the season. So you're kind of switching up what your major plan has been for the rest of the season so far. Yates wasn't really a surprise to me. I just think that's the way it worked out in terms of the game. And hindsight's an amazing thing, because I think, you know, before the game I would have gone, yeah, Yates would be the perfect person to put in. And I'm not saying he was bad, but, you know, I think Forrest lost some of what they've done before in midfield as a result of certain personnel changes there as well. I mean, the defending ones, we thought Bolly might come in, and I've got a little bit to say about that. But, you know, Aurier coming, if it is for an iron and knock, then there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, just talk about that midfield, because it's interesting, because Sangare's obviously come in for a bit of criticism. I think everyone, we talked last week about what the expectations are on Sangare. Actually, we missed him against Brighton in terms of his ability to break up play and get his foot on the ball and then move it. I agree with you. I was really, really surprised and taken aback over the last 24, 48 hours with the reaction to Sangare's performance on Saturday night. I actually thought he was good first half. And look, he definitely faded in that 20-minute spell after half-time. He definitely faded, but he'd been ill, to your point, and maybe he wasn't fit. And maybe that was always the plan, that you get 60 minutes out of him and then you kind of bring on a substitute. But I actually thought he was all right. I just think that midfield three didn't perhaps complement itself, because we did talk about Yates coming in. We talked about Yates coming in last week if Sangare was injured. Does Sangare, Yates and Mangala work as a three? I'm not quite sure it did. What Forrest couldn't do on Saturday night, which neither team could do really, but Forrest really couldn't do, was just keep hold of the ball. They couldn't play that ball through midfield and then get the midfield, you know, carrying the ball up the pitch and feeding the front three. They did it on occasion. Mangala in the second half got free and wriggled free through the middle. He was definitely the shining light out of the three throughout the whole game. But I just don't think it really works. A lot of you know, Yates, he was good in what he did. What Yates does is he hustles and he harries and he gets into opposition's faces. But once he got the ball, there's not enough there, I don't think. And I don't think that three really helped Forrest on Saturday night. I think they kept on turning the ball over. They just couldn't get the foot on it at all. But yeah, really, I was surprised by and disappointed by the reaction to Sangare. People already seemingly, I didn't understand the criticism of his performance overall on Saturday, and also people already writing him off now in terms of being a poor signing. And I think people have got short memories here in terms of people this year have been raving about Mangala. You included raving about Mangala on the pod. A 1 year, people are raving about him. It didn't click for them straight away when they came into the Premier League. And I thought we've seen enough in glimpses to know what Sangare is about and the quality that he has. He's just finding it hard to adjust. But I thought that was just all around a little bit harsh. And I think the three of them just didn't work. And that for me would be food for thought coming into this pivotal period here. Hopefully Sangare obviously will be better for the 60 odd minutes that he got in on Saturday. Now there's a decision to be made around Yates and whether you bring Dominguez back in. I would probably argue to do that, just because what Dominguez can do with the ball and he offers a similar ability to be able to press. So I just thought that's where Forrest really let themselves down, because whether that be with the midfield three, or we'll come on to the forwards in a minute, but whenever Forest got the ball, they were just turning it over so quickly. And that's what I said at the start. They were playing right into Everton's hands, weren't they? And Everton knew that, because as soon as they pressed Forest, Forest panicked. And in the end, they resorted to, quite often, launching long balls up to Chris Wood, which, for a big lad, he's not that type of striker, is he? He just can't hold it up that well. And when he does hold it up, it just slows everything down. And it was a disappointing thing for me. I thought the midfield three, just the balance isn't right with those three.
No, I just thought it was the sloppiest game that Forest have had all season. Yeah. And, you know, in terms of whether Yates stays or Dominguez comes back in, I don't think it's much of a question to me. I'd be bringing Dominguez back in, because there's a difference between, I think Dominguez adds a little bit of an edge to that midfield. You know, he's aggressive in a different way to probably Yates is. They both have an aggressive nature to the way that they play football, but I think the way that they go about it is slightly different. And I think there was times where Yates gave away free kicks or passes going away. I'm not saying Dominguez or Mangala and Sangare haven't done that this season either. I just think what Dominguez does slightly different is there's a bit more control to his aggression and the way that he portrays that on the football pitch. And that's nothing against Ryan Yates, because I still rate him as a Forest player and as a, you know, player within the squad. But I think for the next two that are so vitally important, I would be looking to revert back to that midfield that I think, regardless of the results we've had before, we've all said that that's probably been the most impressive area of the team. So why break that? But I get why for this one we might have broken it apart to try something slightly different, or because of personnel, injuries, whatever. But, you know, I think for the next two, you'd have to revert back to that three. And, you know, when it comes to Sangare as well, in terms of people saying how bad he was, well, if he had been ill for the week before, you know, there have to be questions about picking him and whether he was 100% ready for the game as well. Like I said, I didn't think he was bad in large parts of the game. I think, yeah, there was parts where he wasn't his best. And I think when you're a player, when he's signed for the amount of money that he has, he will always get more criticised than some of the rest of the squad in comparison to a Dominguez who signed for far less, a Mangala who signed for far less, Yates who's come through the academy. You'll always get a little bit more critique because of that, even though we can't control that. That's just the nature of football and the way that we judge players, because that ultimately puts you higher up on a list in terms of where you think about the quality that they should have and should show on a football pitch. But I also think the same vein that Mangala, for me, is a completely different quality player this season to he was last season. Even though Sangare comes in maybe already with a much higher pedigree, it's going to take him time. And I still think he has shown things so far this season that shows that he's important to this first 11. And when you take him out, we're a far worse team without him than with him in it. But he will have moments. And I just think this was one of those games for the whole squad. Let's, you know, we can all criticise Sangare.
They didn't play well, did they? Yeah.
No. You can Murillo.
Yeah. Murillo. If we just have 10 Murillos, we'd be all right. The thing is,
he probably was Forest's best attacking player on the pitch for a centre back.
Literally, that's what I was about to say. Our best attacking moments were when Murillo kind of moved to that left back spot, didn't he? When we had to change the formation, and he went on some kind of bump. He loves a good charge forward, doesn't he? He loves to get on the ball and run forward. I love him. We don't need to spend another 5 minutes talking about his qualities, but he was by far Forest's best player. And all joking aside, was probably one of their most biggest attacking threats. And he had a great game. Obviously, cleared one off the line, and he's huge for Forest. But let's stay on that theme in terms of the back four. We've spoken about Aina and Ori. Let's talk about centre backs, because you said you got something to say on the Bolly factor. I mean, look, I'll kick off before you kind of go into one on the centre half pairing, but I understood to an extent why Bolly had come in for this one, in terms of we know what Bolly does, and we were expecting a bit of an aerial bombardment, which, let's be honest, Forest haven't dealt with. I thought he was okay, Bolly. What I will say about Bolly is, though, that after 30, 35 minutes, his race was done, and you can't rely on him. And he, that's a real shame. It's a real shame that you can't, but Forest have got to move on. We've got these type of players that could come in and play 30 minutes and then are likely to be injured again now for the next few weeks. You can't build a team around them. I was really surprised, and I might be touching on what you're about to come on to, but I was really then surprised that that Bolly was replaced at half time by Felipe, who looked really rusty when he came on in that second half. And again, I've seen people praising Felipe's performance. I think he was lucky to stay on the pitch, if I'm honest, in terms of picking up that early yellow. He was lucky not to get a second. And I just wonder whether Nia Carter, we said before on the pod last week that Nia Carter obviously hobbled off the pitch at the end of the Brighton game. I wonder whether he was carrying or not, because it does seem bizarre that once Bolly was injured, that Nia Carter wasn't next man up, if you like, to coin a Steve Cooper phrase. That was bizarre in itself. We're all excited. We all want a fully fit Felipe back. On that performance, Felipe's a long way from being back, I would suggest. And I hope that if Bolly is injured this week, as we head to Fulham, I'm hoping it's Nia Carty that comes back into to partner Murillo, because I just don't think Felipe seems on it yet, and I'd worry about throwing him in for two away games. But yeah, really disappointed for Bolly, but just disappointed in general, because I just think, you know, we need to pick a pair in there and obviously give them a run of games. And Nia Carty was getting that. I understand the Bolly one. It looks like we might have to revert back to kind of the Murillo Nia Carty partnership. But if he does do that at the weekend, I'd back that for the next run of games.
Yeah, I think Nia Carty was probably not ready, and he's probably on the subs bench, really, just
numbers.
Well, numbers to make a point on certain things, who knows. But, you know, I think that's why he was probably there. But, you know, Felipe, for me, looked super rusty. And to be quite honest, I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see him too much more in Foshett. And that's not me being a real huge critique of his performance to that extent, that I'm like, I never want to see him play for Forest again. I just think that's what will happen. I think he's been ready for a few weeks. I think he's come in, you know, because Forest need... You know, he is currently the backup that Forest have, but I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up at Olympiacos in January. Certainly that was the rumour only a few weeks back when Forest were rumoured to be signing the Brazilian centre-back. So, you know, for Bolly, for me, just, you know, I think it was probably one of his worst 45 minutes. And I think people almost lean on him as a reliable pillar to go to, if you like. But I think there's been so many times, and look, I'm not ignoring some of the stats that you're seeing, like the who scored ratings, and Bolly's apparently rated as one of the best centre backs in the league when he's played, which continues to astound me when I see that. But like, I get it, he's highly, you know, relied upon, and a lot of people like him. Again, I almost think the opposite way for Sangare is that Bolly came in on the cheap. He came in as an option that maybe people weren't expecting to do that well. And he's come in and he's done a job for Forest at times. I think there's been times where he could have cost Forest more goals than he actually has. I think there was one even in this one where Bolly gets in the way of Lekodimos, and Beto really should do a lot better with the chance he's got on goal as a result of Bolly getting in the way. You know, it's silly little things like that he can do. And he's almost another one. We said it in the summer, you know, when there was players rumoured to be going to, you know, moves away from the club whose contracts were expiring at the end of the year. And there was a lot of people very defensive. Oh, we need to keep that player. He's so reliable. But, you know, sometimes you have to look at the direction that maybe some people are going in. And Bolly, for me, is one I worry about, especially with the amount of injuries that he picks up. I'm not saying, again, that I'm like, I never want to see Bolly in a Forest shirt, because I'm sure we will. And he still is relied upon purely because he's one of very few options that Forest have at centre-back. But one of few centre-back options that Forest have that maybe aren't unhappy at this moment in time. But, you know, I just think he needs to be careful in terms of, you know, people maybe overpraising him, and I don't think he had a good game at all on Saturday. It doesn't maybe help whoever the partner is to Murillo probably looks maybe slightly worse than they would have if they were partnered to someone else who's just as, you know, about on the same level as they are. So, you know, Murillo obviously stands out, you know, head and shoulders above. And again, we don't want to talk about him too much because we've spoken about him loads in the weeks that's gone by. But at the end of the day, when someone that good is next to you and younger than you, you have to try and raise your game as well. And I haven't seen that. So
let's talk about centre-half options, because it is interesting. Forest obviously being linked with a couple of centre-halves for January. A couple of our centre-halves are already starting to be linked with moves away. Forest aren't short of in numbers, but obviously at the minute, with Bolly now looking like he's going to be, you would expect, out for a few games at least. Felipe being put on the bench, looking a bit rusty. The likes of Worrell, McKenna, Omobamadeli surely's got to be the next one off the rank to get a chance. But obviously, he himself has been quite vocal in recent weeks about not being happy and not being getting a chance. Obviously, we don't really know what's gone off. There's a lot of speculation about what's gone off between Cooper and Worrell, and probably Cooper and McKenna as well in recent weeks. You know, a couple of stalwarts there from previous incarnations of the Forest side. But it's not all happy, is it? It's not a happy ship if you think about some of the other players that are being left out of the squad as well, in terms of the Tavares, Montiel, etc. The problem with Forest, when Forest have got a big squad, is that there's going to be unhappy players. And that, when you're losing, comes to the fore a little bit more. And I just wonder now, with especially at centre-half, does he try to just muddle through until January? Or do the likes of Omobamadeli and Worrell come back into the thinking? And if there are issues there between the players and the manager, like, that has to be overcome pretty quickly, doesn't it? I'm trying to be political on this one.
Further political, and I'll say, well, it depends on where we're at with January. Without going into any further detail, it depends on a lot of things in January by that stage, I'd imagine. But no, I imagine if we're not happy with them and we don't think they're good enough, we're not going to change our minds and just throw them back in. And that shouldn't be the case. The problem we've got is that half our centre backs are made out of biscuits. So,
definitely.
That really
even Nia Carty. Even Nia
Carty. Yeah, 100% Nia Carty. Nia Carty's probably number one.
Bolly might beat him on the biscuit level. But.
I was going to go into a weird kind of biscuit.
Let's stop talking about biscuits.
so you would think Omobamadeli, albeit, he's been vocal in terms of not getting a chance. He was signed by the club for his potential to be good enough. So you would think that that he would be next up. Look, I think they need to get to January and they need to sign a centre-back and they need to sign a striker. And we're looking at a busy window potentially again, maybe a winger. But options aren't great there. Forest need to be a bit stronger and they need to find consistency. That's the problem. That's the one thing they don't have. You know, you bring one in, they get injured. Bring another one in, they get injured. You think you're about to get to a point where it's consistent. You know, the last thing we need it. You know, not to throw back to Fulham away last year and both your centre-backs get injured again, who knows. But, Forest need to find consistency in that area and it needs to be a partner, hopefully with Murillo for a little bit longer in his Forest career. That's a really solid pairing, consistent pairing that injuries can also be about luck, but I think what we're finding with the ones that we have at the moment is that it's fairly consistent. Felipe has maybe just had, I don't know, maybe the one injury. I'm trying to think of it, but it's been a long-term one. But again, he's one that I'm not certain you'll see too much of in a Forest shirt. Again, that's purely a guess. So, they really need to do some work there. They need to find another centre-back because I don't think you will find that the old crew that maybe kind of out of the picture at the moment will have too much of a
again.
But no, I don't think so. But I could be surprised if there's a whole new centre-back pairing on Wednesday, but I would be surprised if there was.
No, I agree. In terms of the goal that Forrest gave away, it was a long time coming, wasn't it? In terms of, we've already talked about the chance that Murillo cleared off the line. Everton were knocking on the door without, obviously, Rekodamos having to make too many saves. It was a poor goal to give away. Any criticism there of anyone in the build-up, or was it just a collective effort, if you like, in terms of shooting themselves in the foot? It wasn't as bad as some of the goals that they've given away, but lacklustre, quite static. My only criticism would be perhaps Aurier could have done a little bit more to block the shot. I've seen a lot of criticism of Lekodamos over the last couple of days as well. I'm not sure he could really do anything about that. It was quite a good finish, I would say that, from the striker. But just in general, poor goal to give away. Any thoughts on Lekodamos' performance overall over 90? There wasn't enough there for me to really question his place or warrant a thought of bringing Turner back. I haven't seen that I know Forrest conceded a lot of goals in recent weeks, but it's more the players in front of him that have been letting him down. I think as a collective team effort, it was shouldn't have really got to the position that it was in. And perhaps Aurier could have done a little bit more to close. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh there as well, but I'm not sure I could be throwing too many pelters at the keeper.
No, I didn't think anything.
I don't understand that.
With the goal. No, it was all really pedestrian in front of him. It was all very standoffish. It got pinged from one side to the other. No one barely moved. Ball goes in. There's a few people kind of half-heartedly throwing heads towards it. No one gets to it. Gets to McNeil. I mean, it was like musical statues at that point. No one bothered anything. He's got all the time in the world to strike the ball, and I don't think Vlachodimos could do anything about it. I mean, with Vlachodimos, he's bound to be an easy target again because he's come in and Forrest have gone on a bad run, but you can't pinpoint him, I don't think. Yes, Forrest
has conceded goals,
but I think if Turner was in the team, you would still have conceded those goals or slightly different goals, who knows, but you would have still conceded goals. It's more what's happening in front. And Forrest losing complete control of games, which is something they were doing a lot better earlier on in the season, that is now contributing to Forrest getting attacked. People are working Forrest out. They're not the team that they were last season, just, you know, going into that defensive line and then hitting teams. They're trying to play brand, which obviously we're happy about, but they don't seem to have much else about them after plan A at the moment. Which is a worry, because I've never said that before in the last 2-3 seasons, whatever it's been. I've never said that Forrest have lacked ideas or being inventive or making a change, a big change that you wouldn't have thought of when we've needed to, you know. But that's where I'm at the moment. And I don't think you can blame the goalkeeper for that. I think you have to look at the players in front and go, what are we going to do to change what's happening?
I've got no issues with Vlachodimos. Again, it might just be a fickle minority from a Twitter point of view, but I think there's so much going on in front of him that's wrong with Forrest at the minute. I think it's a bit harsh to label him. I'm also not going to sit here and praise him a week ago, 2 weeks ago, to then sit on here and go, he should be doing much better. He couldn't have done anything about that. A lot of the goals that Forrest have conceded in recent weeks are not his doing, and there's not a lot he could have done about them. So I find it bizarre, some of the criticism, but I suppose when you lose and everyone's a little bit angry and a little bit irate, there's a lot of finger-pointing. But I think, again, it's just not the worst goal Forrest had given away in last week's, but there's some good, you know, some tough competition in that. But I think as a collective, they could have done a lot more to stop that ball from getting into a dangerous area. And I think from that moment onwards, you felt Forrest were going to struggle. I couldn't really see a way back at that perspective. Everton had been doing all of the knocking on the door, if you like, and Forrest huffed and puffed, and, you know, they made subs, but not hugely impactful. I'm not sure he made them quick enough either, other than obviously the body for Felipe changes at half-time. I know Hudson-Odoi came on the 65 mark, but we were crying out for a little bit more firepower. Origi, whilst he hasn't been prolific, he's another option that you've got up top, and he didn't bring him on until the last kind of 5-10 minutes. And I just thought it was too late, and I thought Chris Wood needed... Well, he needed something. He needed some help, or... Whether he was the right choice, I don't know. It didn't work for Chris Wood. I don't think Forrest are playing to Chris Wood's strengths, first and foremost. I don't think Chris Wood is helping himself, though. I don't think it was his best performance in the stuff that he could affect. He ultimately changes the way Forrest play. And he's not Tyro Wanyu. He never will be Tyro Wanyu. We didn't sign him, I don't think, because he was Tyro Wanyu. It was kind of a different option. He's been thrust into the limelight. He's not done too bad when he's had the opportunities, but I think the last couple of games have really shown it up. And what I think was the frustrating thing was on Saturday, this when Forrest were chasing the game, they needed to try and be a little bit more urgent. When he's playing with his back to goal, you know, he's coming to the halfway line to get the ball, he's slowing it down. He had so many times he brought the ball down and could have turned and moved forward, but every single time he brings the ball down and he goes for the easy layoff and plays it backwards, and it just everything about that forward play, whether it be the forwards or the centre midfield, it was just so slow and it was just so disappointing. And I think it needed freshening up. He didn't have a huge amount of options on the bench, Steve Cooper, but I thought he might have brought Origi on either forward or gone with two up top earlier than he perhaps did. And I suppose, yeah, just to back up your point, in reality, it didn't change. It didn't felt like it was changed. There was nothing there that looked like it was going to inspire a goal. Forest had a couple of half chances, a couple in the first half, and obviously they have hit the post in the second half. A lot of it tends to be from scrambles and those half chances, snatching at chances, I think is the way that you kind of summarise it on Saturday night. But he was all just a bit lacklustre, wasn't it? And I don't think, look, Forest had the penalty shout. There wasn't huge shouts in the ground, I must admit. It was only when we got back in the car, and obviously you talked about the fact that Jamie Redknapp, the Oracle that is Jamie Redknapp, was talking about the fact that he thought it was a penalty. And I know since then a lot of people have jumped on that bandwagon. Steve Cooper himself has jumped on that bandwagon. But whether it is or not, yes, it would have been the week before against Brighton, not to open that kind of worms again, but it probably would have been. But I don't think Forrest, I think if Forrest had taken a point from this, I think whilst they weren't great, I think it probably would have been harsher on Everton. I think Everton were just, I think they justified the 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, for the penalty shout, I thought it was soft.
You weren't having it.
No, I didn't question it in real time. And I think, we can keep on slowing things down and making it look worse. Look, the argument that people have, which I totally get, is if it was in the Brighton game, that's given us a penalty and that referee would have given it, or that VAR team would have given it. And I totally get that. But, I'm also of... And I like this part of the game, even though other people won't, is that I like the fact it's an opinion game, and person by person, that decision will change. And unfortunately, when we're shouting for criticism all the time, consistency all the time, it's just not going to happen unless you want the rules to change to be so rigid that you completely change the face of the game. Because it, shouts like that will be, it's an opinion shout. At the end of the day, and in my opinion, it wasn't a penalty. And I wouldn't have said half the ones against Brighton were a penalty either, but they were both given. Do you know what I mean? That's the
Way
we're at. And I get people's frustration with it, and I get Steve Cooper coming out and blaming a referee again after a game because he wants consistency. But I think that's look, regardless of whether you think that's a penalty or not as well, it's a cheap shot at trying to get a point from a game that Forest were just not good enough to get anything from.
Yeah, agree with that. Agree, 100% agree with that. And we've got, and that's the thing. I don't want this to be, the whole conversation around the Everton performance isn't about whether Forest should have had or shouldn't have had a penalty. It's about the fact that, and Steve Cooper talks about a lot about owning it. They've got to own the fact that they were poor. They weren't good enough, and they need to find a performance in this next week, because it kind of leads me on to my next question, really, in terms of there's a lot of talk about last week and the build up about Steve Cooper being under pressure and a poor performance and a poor result could ultimately lead to a change. Well, Forest served up a poor performance and obviously got beaten. Been quite adamant on this pod over the last few weeks that fully behind Steve Cooper. We want Steve Cooper to do well. I still fully believe in Steve Cooper and believe that he can turn this round. And it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about good performances, ultimately leading to defeats, but you can still see the building blocks. You can see where Forest were going. This was the first time you look at it and go, hang on a minute, there's a few warning shots here, there's a few warning lights. It's a silly question really, but Cooper firmly under pressure, is that fair? Is that unjust? Would any other manager in the Premier League after a run of one win in 10 in the position that Forest have been in, be under pressure? Is it just the fact that it's Steve Cooper and Forest where people are obviously jumping to his defence? Or, where are you at, I suppose, at the moment in terms of Steve Cooper and his position?
Well, I want Cooper to stay at the moment. But I'm very much in the mindset of let's see what happens over the next few games, for example. But I want Steve Cooper to stay. And I think, look, when it comes to Steve Cooper, emotion will always ride
high
on people's thoughts, which is completely normal. Like, that's not a criticism. That is completely normal. I also think when you're hearing the media speak about Steve Cooper, one thing that they're going to stick by Steve Cooper is, oh, he's done such a good job there. He got them promoted, kept them up last season. I totally get all that. Like, it's completely just. It is completely just. To answer your question, would another manager be under pressure if they had one win in 9 or whatever? Yes. So that's why I'm not too upset that he is deemed to be under pressure, because I think that is completely normal in modern day football, whether we like it or not. That is the way that the game is. And ultimately, I support Forest at the end of the day. So, look, Saturday was really, really bad. But if Forest put in a decent performance on Wednesday, then Saturday is quickly forgotten about. It's funny, you know, people have very short memories. You know, we can remember during COVID and people said, oh, I'll be a bit more appreciative of this and appreciative of that. And it goes out the window once you're kind of back in normality after a week. But like, people have very short memories, and that will be, you know, you get some good points on the board this week. Any of this kind of, you idiots for thinking Steve Cooper was going to go like that, will be the story on the X timeline. It will be, oh, God, you lot who want a Cooper out, you really are fickle. But like, if you lose two games on the bounce, then that noise is going to get louder. I think this week is pivotal. I don't want it to be, and regardless, you know, with whoever wants, I don't think wants Cooper out is the right word, because I think again, emotion plays a large part into it. But whoever thinks that maybe we're getting to that time, you know, I don't think it'll be easy for anyone if that was to be the case that happened. So I think we have to be really careful on criticising people for people who maybe think it's the right time, or you know, even criticising people who are finding it hard to say it is the right time because of the emotional attachment to it, given how well he's done and everything he's done for Forest over the last couple of years. Personally, as I said, I want him to stay, and I think, you know, this run of games in December will be hugely pivotal to my thinking in what happens next to Nottingham Forest Football Club. But I think if anyone deserves the opportunity to show that, it is Steve Cooper. I also think we're in a bit of a, you said the right words, and I might be, you know, kind of stepping on your toes. You said, you know, are we sleepwalking into trouble a little bit on Saturday? And I agree with that. The only thing I would say to twist that on its head slightly is almost, can you, is this almost the perfect opportunity for Forrest to give Steve Cooper a little bit more time in order to prove whether he can turn it around and be the manager that we all know he is, rather than it being a different season where you'd have to make an instant decision and not take that risk? Do Forrest have an opportunity to take a risk and hope that whoever comes in next, if it did get to that point, then would still be able to pick up enough points to beat those teams below them? I think you do. So I don't necessarily think that you have to press the panic button yet. And I don't want them to. But I completely get why, if I was the owner of Nottingham Forest Football Club, I would be starting to question a few things.
Yeah. We said this last week, we can't answer for him in terms of what the owner's aspirations are. I believe, and I think we all probably believe, that the aspirations of the owner are higher than fourth from bottom place finish. I think as fans, we probably expecting a year of consolidation. I've talked at length about that, somewhere between 10th to 14th being the goal. And look, we're not a million miles away from mid-table. That's the weird thing, right? We are equally as close to the top 10 as we are the bottom three in terms of the points gap. So Forest on a bad run. There's a lot to not like about Saturday's performance. But I think the next week, the next couple of games are really going to show us about what this squad is about. Because I did say that, I've said it a lot over the last week in terms of I worry about Forest sleepwalking into trouble. And I get there's an air of complacency. You see it, you can almost see that on the pitch. And I know a lot of people have had a moan about the crowd reaction and the supporters and the atmosphere at the City Ground not being what it was. But it's got to feed off each other. It's not mutually exclusive. It can't just be the crowd are noisy and the team are crap. Last season when Forest came into the Premier League, it was new, it was shiny. We'd not been there for 20-odd years, for 23 years. And we said on the pod last week, you had to fight for every point. I'm not sensing that this season from this squad, that they are, you know, I'm not saying they're not putting the effort in, but it's not the same, is it? When you've probably got a squad that you would deem less quality and therefore needing to work hard to fight for every point. Everyone, not even Forest fans, when Forest completed their summer business, people outside of the club are going, Forest does some good business there. They're going to be all right. Do you know what I mean? They're going to be pushing on. And I think there's almost an air of complacency about the place, whether that be the players, the I'm not sure the management, but certainly from the supporters' perspective, it's almost like it's a given that the goal is the top 10. and we're not thinking about the bottom three, but you see quite a few teams in this league who have got good squads, who have struggled, got dragged into relegation battles and ultimately have gone down. Leicester being one of them last year, and Leeds to a lesser extent. But it's happened throughout time, you know. I don't think that will be the case, by the way. I'm not saying Forest will go down. I still think that bottom three, is the three that came up are poor. I don't want this to be the thing, though, that Forest just think, oh, we're going to be all right. It's all right. We'll just meander through. And then all of a sudden you get to February, March, and you're in trouble. So I think Forest do need a result. They need to turn it around quickly. They need to start getting that confidence on the board. I still think Forest could get points between now and Christmas. We've got four huge games. It's not gone the way we wanted it for the first two. We talked about this run of games being important, but I think we're going to see what Forest and what Steve Cooper is about in these next two. And it wouldn't surprise me if Forest picked up points at Fulham and Wolves, and we're sat here next week and it's all a little bit happier. But he definitely needs the results. I'm a big... Look, everyone's a big fan of Steve Cooper, and we know what job he's done. It is a results business, and as you said, we're Forest fans, and we don't want Forest to be getting closer to that trap door. If this run continues, then ultimately you would have to say then a change might be required. But I think he gets the next two, and we've just got to back him, and the fans will, and the players have got to show what they're about. And then let's see where we are come this time next week. But you know, we all want Steve Cooper to do well. He deserves it. He deserves the chance to be able to turn this poor form around. As we said, it's not that long ago since we beat Villa and everyone was lauding Forest. So things can turn around quite quickly in football, and I would absolutely love it to happen for Steve Cooper, because I think Forest under Steve Cooper are just a better club with him at the helm. But I think, yeah, it is a results business. And what we don't want to see is more performances like Saturday, because if we see more performances like Saturday, then that opens up a whole load of trouble, doesn't it? Because that was as poor as I've seen Forest play since we've been back, ultimately, at home, anyway. So results and performances definitely have to improve. Should we talk about Wolves and Fulham first off? Obviously, it's good, as we said at the top of the pod, that Forest have got games in quick succession. Two games, obviously two defeats at home. Does it help? I mean, you said at the start, does it help that Forest are away now? It's a different pressure that Forest have playing away from home, just given the poor record that Forest have. But it's not necessarily the worst thing. They're not two of the most intimidating grounds to be going to. And they're two games that even before these results, you'd have looked at and gone, we could probably get something here. We could, you know, we really fancy our chances. And to go back to what I was saying a minute ago in terms of Forest being, I suppose, equally placed towards the tops and the bottom, these guys are they are directly above us, just 2 points in front of us, both Wolves and Fulham. It's a great opportunity, isn't it, to get your season back on track with a couple of points here?
It's an opportunity because what we've seen is an improvement on performances away from home, apart from, you know, the start of the season. I think even with those defeats away from home looking a lot stronger, they have to do better than what they did against Palace away. I know Forest picked up a point, but I still have a bit of a bee in my bonnet about that.
You do? Yeah, you do. Yeah. You're not happy with that one still?
No, I'm not happy about that one still. And they have to do better than what they did at West Ham, because West Ham, for me, is, you know, one that's probably come in a period where you're letting go leads and making silly mistakes, and that's all accumulated to what we've got to right now. So it has to be far better than those two performances. They're two teams that, without disrespecting them too much, like Fulham haven't been as good as people would have wanted them or expected them to have been this season. They're a club that have they've really come into the season in a bad state of mind, to be quite honest, because they lost their best striker. They almost lost their best midfielder and probably their best player on deadline day to Bayern Munich, and then that one didn't happen. And I know he's still there, but that must mess with your mind a little bit.
He could go as well, Jan, let's be honest.
He will go, yeah, exactly. And then the manager wasn't happy in the summer. I know he signed a new contract now. So it's all been a little bit weird for Fulham. You know, the one thing, obviously, this weekend, 4-3 Liverpool, in some respects, I watched that and I went, they looked good. They gave it a good go. And worryingly, they're doing well with set pieces so far this season, and we all know what that's like for Forest.
Oh,
but
Christ.
You know, also at the same time, will they be deflated because of the way that they ended up losing that game? It's an opportunity for Forest, and with Wolves, probably the more concerning one out of the two for me, even though I at the start of the season expected them to be right down there. But it's still not one of your hardest games in the division away from home, so it's still an opportunity for Forest, and if they can get back to those performance levels, they can potentially get something there. But that one will be the most difficult. And I went there away last season. I did not enjoy myself whatsoever. So.
Horrendous. I've got a real dislike for Wolves. I was going to say irrational, but it's probably not that irrational, to be fair. I just really don't like them in terms of a place as a club, really. But anyway, I'll move on from that bitter opinion. But yeah, you're right. Fulham did have it. I mean, it was an interesting one yesterday, wasn't it, in terms of the 4-3, because they did give it a really good go and probably thought they were coming away with at least a point up until the last moments. They're not struggling for goals in a minute. Obviously, they were at the start of the season. Obviously, they had the fact they lost Mitrovic, as you kind of alluded to, and you know that really hit them hard. But in the last couple of games, obviously, they actually beat Wolves last week 3-2, which wasn't a great game to watch. Obviously, a lot of controversy in that game, but they found their scoring boots. But they concede a little bit. I mean, obviously, things are going their way at the minute, right? Obviously, other than Liverpool. But, you know, where the Wolves game last week, things are going for them. So they're a little bit like they will score, but they are likely to concede as well. So that'll give Forest a chance. Wolves, as you say, they've been really impressive under Gary O'Neill. And I was really harsh on Gary O'Neill last year because when he got the Bournemouth job, I thought they were an absolute dead certs to go down at that point. But he did an amazing job. And when he got booted in the summer, I thought it was harsh on him, but I could kind of see what Bournemouth were doing in terms of potentially wanting to try and hit the upgrade button. And when he ended up at Wolves, I was the same as you. I was convinced that they were in for a season of trouble. And I actually think they've done really, really well. And let's be honest, we've all copped some bad decisions from a VAR point of view, but they do seem to be copping some absolute shockers to Wolves. So you have to say that they keep going, and credit to Gary O'Neill because he deals with that quite well. I'm not sure I would be quite as calm as he is in some of those situations. But they lost at the weekend, Wolves, and so they lost 2-1 to Arsenal. Again, really harsh on them given some of the decision in that game. But prior to that, obviously, they've beat Spurs at home the week before 2-1. So they are performing well. They're a tough nut to crack. It's a crap afternoon, isn't it, Molyneux, in terms of it's always been a bit of a tough ground for Forest to go to. So I think Forest have got to try and be positive going into this. I imagine that whatever system Steve Cooper sets up for Fulham, depending on how that goes, obviously, if it goes really badly, it might kind of throw it out and start again. But I'd imagine two games in short succession, both away from home, he'll probably set up with a similar system and just look to try and build some consistency over those two games. In terms of if you're Steve Cooper, how are you approaching this one? We talked about all of the things that didn't work this weekend and probably last weekend against Brighton. Are you tempted to completely rip it up and start again, or is it just simple little tweaks for you here and there?
I revert to as close as you can do to what was working for you when you're trying to piece this squad together when they all first came together. You know, I think they've tried to develop the way that they play over the games, but I would revert back to square one. Obviously, that it's easier said than done because you still don't have a one year's a huge part of the way that we played it, you know, during some of those games at the start of the season. But I'd be reverting to kind of, I would be keeping it as it has been. I wouldn't be
You're keeping
ripping
it back
up.
Four.
Yeah, I wouldn't be ripping up the
yeah,
game.
Yeah, you got enough centre halves right we've talked about. Anyway,
exactly, yeah, I would stick to my guns, and I think he will. You know, I watched the interview with him on Sky Sports just before I left to meet you in the car on Saturday, and he was very much persistent on that he has to stick to his plan, and I think he will stick to his plan, and you know he'll live or die by that. But I think just go back to the basics rather than doing anything fancy. Play your team to be to our strengths rather than their strengths. I know easier said than done in two away games, but yeah, I think that's the only thing you can do in these next two.
No, I agree. I would stick to a back four. 100% agree with that. I would hopefully partner Nyakati with Murillo. I'd bring Aina back and obviously leave Toff at left back. I want to see the same midfield three that has been, that was starting, that we're all praising. So if Sangare is fit enough to play, Dominguez obviously wasn't injured and he was dropped for a tactical change on Saturday. I'd bring him back and play Sangare, Mangala and Dominguez in midfield. The only thing I would be tempted to swap and to change, and I criticised this a lot last year when he tried to do it with to try and get Lingard into the team. But for me, it's not working with Chris Wood. I think he gives you an option off the bench if you're chasing a game. Maybe it works against certain defences, but I've not seen enough in these last two games to to warrant a start for him. And Origi at the minute, he's obviously not trusted to start a game, and he's very much seen as a player off the bench to bring on. So I'd put them both on the bench, and I'd perhaps play Gibbs White in the false nine position with Hudson-Odoi and Alanga off of him, and see how that three could work and keep that quite fluid and interchangeable, and cause Fulham some problems that way in terms of the speed and getting in behind. I think he's got to try something because he's not working at the minute with Chris Wood up there. So that would be my only thing. I've got a feeling he might go for that as well, because I think he's in that type of mode now where he's got to try something. He's got to change something. He hasn't necessarily got, you know, a million and one options that he can do in the final third. I think he might try and get those. And if he can get Alanga and Hudson-Odoi in the game, you could build that connection with Gibbs White, then that could be quite an exciting front three for the next few games. But I know people will be screaming when they hear that because they want an out-and-out striker up top. But there's other clubs in the Premier League that don't necessarily go with out-and-out strikers. And I think it worked for us at times last year. Maybe perhaps it didn't just work having Lingard in there. But I think I've seen enough from whilst Alanga might frustrate at times, he's obviously got the pace to get in and behind. And I think Hudson-Odoi, whilst he showed glimpses on Saturday, I think there's more to come from him. So that would be my own. That would be the big call. But I can see him doing that, if I'm honest.
Possibly. I mean, look, I'm not Chris. I'm not going to get posters of Chris Wood on my wall. Like he's certainly not. You know, doing amazing, but I don't think he's doing badly either. I think he does the job that he was brought in for. As you said earlier, he's kind of been pulled in to replace a 1 year. I think he always thought he was more of a backup. And look, Forrest would have two less points at least on the table if he didn't score that last-minute goal against Sheffield United at home in the first home game of the season. And there's other goals that he's scored in his time here. So, look, I totally get what you're saying in terms of trying the false nine and making it a bit more fluid up front and having that pace, and that's kind of one of Forrest's strengths and have been since Steve Cooper arrived at the club. But yeah, I mean, Chris Wood is definitely still a key option for Forrest at the moment for me. But yeah, he might give it a whirl.
I mean, he's got it. I think he's got it. But I'm not the manager. Anyway, I haven't asked you predictions. I was going to cut you off there. Maybe I don't hear him actually. Maybe yeah, I will cut you off. Go on, predictions.
You've been positive. I want to see it.
If you could go back to being negative, we might win.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
The actual predictions are, I think Forest will get a win away at Craven Cottage. And you know, Cooper's got a knack of pulling out results, but maybe, you know, maybe he's run out of lives, but he has. So I'm going to go 2-1 Forest away at Craven Cottage. But I think they'll lose at Molyneux, and I think they'll lose 3-1 at Molyneux.
Oh, go on, Bennett. Do you know what? I'm going to ramp the positivity up because it's a grey, bleak Monday morning when we're doing, or Monday afternoon now when we're doing this. But I also agree. I think Forest will get a result at Fulham. I think Forest will want to show that they're a better side than obviously they showed the world on Saturday night. So I think Forest will win. Forest will concede. They're going to need to score two, therefore, which is a stretch given what we've seen this weekend. But I agree with your 2-1. I think Forest will nick it. And I don't know. I think Forest will get a point at Molyneux. That is blind optimism. But I think if Forrest could come away with 4 points from these next two, that'll go some way to answering the criticisms, if you like, of the last week. And then that sets you up. Oh, I hate to say this, but it's the hope that kills you. And then that sets you up again for two more home games pre-Christmas. And I said, look, Forrest have got to try and be on the magic 20 come Christmas morning. So it's all to do, right? You've got to find 7 points from these four games, and they don't look like buying a win at the minute. So that is going to be tough. But I do think Forrest will get some of Fulham. I think perfect opportunity for them, albeit an improved Fulham in the last two games. They'll definitely present you chances. So let's see. We will be back next Monday, hopefully a little bit more chipper and upbeat, although we have just predicted a Forest win out of these games. So that is good. If you've enjoyed listening to us, you could obviously follow us on X at Time Added On Pod. You could email us at timeaddedonpod@outlook.com. And as always, give us a follow on Spotify and Apple and leave a review. Tom, enjoy. You're not going to Fulham away this week either. You're missing both Fulham and Wolves. So we'll be watching that from the comfort and the warmth of our own armchairs. Everyone who's going to both of those games, enjoy. Let's hope it's a bit more fruitful from this than this weekend. But yeah, we will be back next week. Come on, you Reds.